Hello and welcome back to the MJA podcast. My name is Kate Swanell. Mycobacterium ulcerans is a nasty bug in the news of late because it causes necrotizing ulcers known by a variety of names around the country. In the coastal regions of Victoria where M. ulcerans is endemic, it is known as Baruli ulcer. In far north Queensland it is Daintree ulcer and elsewhere it is called Bairnsdale ulcer. Associate Professor Daniel O'Brien is an infectious diseases specialist at Barwon Health in Geelong and the Royal Melbourne Hospital. He is the lead author of some research published in the MJA, which shows how diagnosing Baruli ulcer before it has ulcerated can produce false negative results, which may delay the all-important diagnosis. Daniel is my guest today. Baruli ulcer, we all know there's a cluster going on, so for want of a better word. What's the state of play at the moment down your end of the country?
Well, look, I mean, we basically every year in the last 3 to 4 years have been having, you know, about a 50% increase in the number of cases. So what we're seeing is a rapid increase in the number of cases. We're seeing it moving into new areas, and we're also seeing a high proportion of the cases being severe. So those two things are all sort of changing and I guess are really quite a cause for concern.
Are we getting better at treating it?
Oh, absolutely. I think we've moved quite a long way with treatment. I think treatment's still difficult. It's not easy. I don't think any of my patients would say it's a lot of fun. No. But what we've really managed to do is streamline and shorten and minimise the amount of antibiotic treatment that's needed, minimise the amount of surgery that's needed, and hopefully heal wounds quicker than previously. So therefore the cost and inconvenience of treatment is less. Absolute key still is early diagnosis, because the sooner you get it, in general, the smaller the lesion is, and therefore the treatment is much simpler, quicker, and the healing much more rapid.
Just to recap for the listeners, what bug causes this and what antibiotics are the front line?
Well, it's caused by a mycobacterium. Mm-hmm. It's called Mycobacterium ulcerans, and it's in the same family as tuberculosis and leprosy. So people may have heard of those diseases. It's quite an unusual bug, but it's also a different bug. And that's part of the thing, is that the normal antibiotics don't work, and therefore if it's treated as a normal infection, it won't be cured. And that's why you need very specialised antibiotics, which are, in fact, highly effective. So we cure really close to 100% of people. But because they're different, quite powerful, they also have quite a lot of potential side effects. So they're often quite difficult to take. And the second thing is, because it's not a normal bacteria, you need to take the antibiotics for a prolonged period of time. And that's now somewhere between 6 and 8 weeks in general.
Okay, you did this research exactly to see whether there was a lag in diagnosis or a delayed diagnosis. Tell us a little bit about the design of the study and why you decided to do it that way.
Look, the reason that I did it was that I was seeing a number of patients, especially children, who'd had what was the diagnostic test for Mycobacterium ulcerans performed, but that it had come up negative. And the problem was that when the test was done, the health practitioner managing them had said, well, therefore it can't be this disease. Yeah. And that led to, unfortunately, in some cases, significant delays in treatment, which, of course, as mentioned, makes things more difficult and outcomes, not as good for the patient. So it was really a realisation that this test is in fact a very good test. It's highly specific and highly accurate, and that is the PCR test, if it's performed properly and appropriately. And what I realised was that there are clearly some pitfalls in the performance of the test that can lead to adverse outcomes. So what I really wanted to do was have a look and see, well, you know, is this just a couple of one-off cases, or is this, like I suspected, something that is not uncommon? Therefore, I wanted to look at our experience in what is a large cohort now of patients that we've been following prospectively in Barwon Health in Geelong, who've been diagnosed with the disease. What percentage of them, or proportion of them, had actually had a negative diagnosis on their first test? It was really designed just to retrospectively look back through all the patient's diagnostic data and come up with, one, what the proportion of initial negative results was, and two, to then look at what are some associated risk factors for that, so that, one, we could at least alert people to the fact that this isn't that uncommon, and it is something to be aware of. But mm-hmm. two, what are the particular circumstances that you might be more suspicious that this might happen,
yeah.
and then pay more attention to it.
So what kind of delays were you finding?
Well, the average delay was about 2.5 weeks, but some of the delays are, you know, 1 to 2 and sometimes even longer than 2 months. So quite significant delays. And the disease can progress quite a lot in that time.
When you're going to do a PCR, it's a swab, presumably. Is this something that the GPs do, or is it a specialist who does this swab?
No, absolutely a GP can do it.
Okay.
Yep. In fact, one of the key points about the Brulee ulcer is that it's not always an ulcer, and that's why it's a slight misnomer, really. And in fact, 15% of cases, it won't be an ulcer. It'll either be a nodule, or it'll be like a cellulitis, sort of a swelling, a red swelling of a limb or a joint. And therefore, when it's actually ulcerated, the test is reasonably straightforward, as long as you swab around the undermined edges of the wound and then make sure there's clinical material on that, then that should almost always be positive. But if the lesion hasn't ulcerated and you just swab the surface of the lesion, which some people do, then that will be negative because there's no actual organisms on the surface of the wound. They're actually underneath the skin in the subcutaneous tissue. And that's probably one of the major pitfalls that people fall into. And it's important because children have a much higher proportion of non-ulcerative lesions early on. So it seems like when we looked at our data that quite a number of the children probably had lesions that were not ulcered, were swabbed, the swab was negative, and then people thought that therefore it was not the disease. And as mentioned earlier, that's obviously not the case. The take-home lessons that I really want people to understand is, one, that if it looks like Brulee ulcer lesion, and you do the test and it comes back negative, to not disregard it, to understand that it can sometimes be negative, and to ensure that the correct specimen is taken in the correct way. And therefore, if it's not ulcerated, rather than swabbing, what you actually need to do is do a punch biopsy and send that tissue off for the PCR and the culture if necessary.
Right.
And if it is a swab, that you properly swab around the edges, ensure that that swab is used only for the PCR test and not for culture as well. If you want culture, then you need to send a second swab.
I'm chatting today with Associate Professor Daniel O'Brien, an infectious diseases consultant at Barwon Health in Geelong. Daniel is the co-author of some research, which is available at mja.com.au, where, like all our research, it is open access. Back to our chat. Do we know why this thing is burgeoning?
Yeah, now that's the great unanswered question. Mm. And we did publish an article earlier last year on this exact point, is that what the major difficulty we're facing is that we have a bit of a scientific knowledge gap around exactly where the organism lives in the environment and how it's transmitted to humans. And we don't really understand why in Victoria, especially, we've got a rapidly increasing and spreading outbreak. When you consider in the west of the world, in fact, it's a tropical disease found in tropical areas, and the number of cases worldwide are, in fact, falling. So we've got quite unique circumstances down in Victoria, and we don't really understand what's driving it. Is if you want to control it, you need to understand that really important scientific information, or we can't design effective public health interventions to help reduce its spread and reduce the number of cases.
Are you involved in research that's looking into the reasons for it burgeoning like
this?
Yeah,
we have. So we got an NHMRC grant in a consortium, you know, with Melbourne University and Barwon Health and Biograd, also Mornington Peninsula Council and the state government, to look exactly at this. So it'll be a number of prongs to it, but one of the main things is, one, just starting from scratch and having a look at the environment and the humans and the animals and trying to work out what are the risk factors for acquiring the disease.
Yep.
But also, secondly, to have an intervention study where we're going to target mosquito control as a way of saying, well, at the moment, that's our best guess that mosquitoes are involved somehow in the process. So because the disease is increasing at a significant rate, we'd rather than wait around and not try any intervention. We thought it would be good to have a go and at least try what we hope will be effective, and that is some mosquito control. So that's also being planned to happen hopefully next year.
I know Victoria is the hotspot right now. Is it happening in other places as well?
Well, look, I mean, there are isolated spots around Australia. The other real hotspot in Australia is far north Queensland in the sort of Daintree, Mossman area. But there are cases that occur occasionally in the Northern Territory, in the far northwest of WA, being cases reported in southern Queensland and also in the southern New South Wales area. But they certainly don't see anywhere near the number of cases we. But one thing that's really important, I think, is that the disease that it, where it occurs in Victoria, in fact, are very popular tourist destinations. So this is really relevant for health practitioners throughout Australia and, in fact, internationally as well, because people come to visit here commonly from all parts of Australia and then they return home, and as the disease takes probably 4 to 6 months to become clinically apparent, they then end with it in their own communities. And unless people are aware of this outbreak and how to diagnose it, then it won't be picked up, because the normal tests won't be positive. You have to ask for this specific M. ulcerans PCR test. Otherwise, it gets missed.
So the take-home message for GPs is, if it comes back negative, don't dismiss it.
Exactly. And I think that's the most important thing, is to be aware that there are circumstances that can mean that the initial test is negative, and to not discard the diagnosis on the basis of one initial test. If it looks suspicious or you don't have another cause for it, the most important thing to do is to repeat the test, and the best way to repeat that test is with a biopsy. Maybe one other thing is one of the sort of the risk factors we found for an initial negative test is children. So it's more common in children, but also people whose lesions are relatively new. So if they've only had them for a few weeks, especially in those circumstances, and that probably relates to the fact that a lot of them are not ulcerated yet, to really consider repeating the test. But I suspect what it is mainly is that the lesion has not fully ulcerated by the time people present, and therefore there's just not enough material on the surface of the wound when it's swabbed to actually pick up the bugs and make the diagnosis. I suspect that's the most likely reason.
Excellent. Thanks, Daniel. Dave. My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.